Hi, I'm Brittany DeShock, and I'm the dental hygienist at Lake Road Dental in Dillingham and also Chimay Dental in Naknek.
So let's just start off with some of these questions. So some of the most common things, and like from the American Dental Association, recommends you brush your teeth twice a day. So why is it only twice instead of after like every meal? Does that lead to overbrushing, or how does that work?
So the reason why the ADA recommends twice a day is they're saying you should brush at least twice a day. That doesn't mean you can't brush more, but twice a day is the bare minimum that you should do. But most hygienists or dentists will recommend you should brush after every meal. And the reason why is when we eat anything, pretty much anything we eat anymore has some sort of sugar or sugar substitute in it. And that is what the bacteria in our mouth feed on. So if we don't brush after a meal, then that bacteria starts feeding off of the sugar that we've eaten, which they release an acid, and that acid is what can cause cavities. So most people would, or most dental professionals would recommend brushing after you eat, but the bare minimum should be at least twice a day.
So can you brush your teeth too much? Is overbrushing a thing that anyone should be concerned about at all?
Overbrushing is not really an issue. I think when people are thinking about overbrushing, they're thinking more of aggressively brushing. So you can brush. You know, I have patients that brush every time they leave their house after every meal. I mean, they're doing it 7-8 times a day, which I'm like, I don't know how you have that much time. But the big thing with that is usually someone who is very meticulous like that, they're more of an aggressive brusher. And so what happens is they can start to cause damage to their gums. And you can actually brush your gums away. It's a condition called recession. And I'm sure most people have heard of it, or at least heard the term. And it's just where you actually can brush the gums away. And the really bad issue with that is that they don't grow back. So once your gums are gone, they are gone. Now, you could go to a specialist like a periodontist, and they could do gum grafting if it's significant enough. And they actually remove some of the tissue off of the roof of your mouth. They call it your donor site, and they take that tissue and put it on the areas of where you've brushed your gums away. So overbrushing is not a thing, but aggressive brushing is definitely an issue that I see on a regular basis.
Okay, good. So that's good to know. And you talked a little bit about how the sugar in a lot of food can start to make the bacteria in your teeth produce acid. Do the bacteria in your mouth, does it distinguish between like healthier sugars from like fruits and other things like that versus processed sugars like cane sugar and from various desserts and candy?
So naturally occurring sugar, like in fruits, like you were saying, it does not. Now there are different types of sugars that are, I'm sure you've heard of them, like xylitol or sorbitol, that what it does is it's a different type of sugar. So the bacteria, when it eats it, actually doesn't really produce an acid. It actually protects the tooth. So there are a few types of sugar substitutes that are a little bit healthier. But as far as when you're drinking milk or you're eating fruit or anything like that, no. It is just like, that's why we tell parents, limit your juice that you give to your kids. Even if it's 100% juice, it doesn't matter, because the bacteria do not discriminate. I'll tell you that. A lot of times people, what they'll do is if they're like, you know, they eat healthier, do a lot more organic, they will use a sugar substitute like the xylitol, which is better for your teeth. So I do tell people to look for that as well, you know, so.
Okay, good. So let's move over to a little bit on the aesthetic side of things. So what kinds of foods are most likely to stain your teeth, and what should people watch out for if they really want to keep the pristine, idealized white teeth that's in like commercials and all that kind of stuff?
So anything relatively dark is going to stain your teeth. I mean, even something like as small as like grape juice. But, you know, for most people, you know, most people are coffee drinkers or tea drinkers or some sort of a caffeine. So anything dark like that, even Powerades will stain your teeth. Tobacco, so chewing or smoking big time. And you can get the dark staining where you see it, and we call that extrinsic stain, meaning that it's on the outside surface of the tooth. So you come in to see your hygienist is going to be able to scrape that off, get that off, polish it off. But then you can get into what's called intrinsic stain, and which that means is like if you're a heavy coffee drinker or you're a heavy smoker, year after year, you know, all of this that you're consistently putting on your teeth, it becomes intrinsic, meaning it actually stains your teeth. So your teeth will, you know, you'll see people where they have like a yellow hue to their teeth, and that is for, that's called intrinsic stain. And, you know, you can't come to your hygienist unless you scrape it off. And so that's where you're looking at more of whitening options. But there is another thing that is pretty common that I'll see kids come into the dental office, and it's called orange stain. And that's not caused from drinking orange juice or eating Cheetos or anything like that. What it is if a child misses a spot over and over and over again, the plaque that is left behind actually, the bacteria releases acid and it creates this orange stain. So a child will come in and it'll look like they just ate Cheetos, but it's actually orange stain from the bacteria and the plaque in their mouth. And you don't really see orange stain on adults as much, but definitely on children.
Okay. And you talked about how some of the stain can get really into your teeth. How does that happen? Is it just over time, just as like coffee keeps seeping into your teeth? Is it just getting to the deeper enamel, or how does that work?
So our teeth are made up of just millions and millions little microtubules. I always explain it to patients like, think of a spaghetti noodle, but it's hollow. And that's exactly what our teeth are made of. And so you start on the enamel, it goes into your dentin, and then you're into the nerve. So what happens is that dark stain is leaking into those little tubules and causing your tooth, you know, just gradually over time, it's changing the color of your tooth. So then when you talk about whitening products, that's exactly what whitening products are doing, is they offer a different percentage of what's called carbamide peroxide, and that is the whitening agent in whitening products. And so you'll have one that's like 3%, you'll have one that's like 18%. Well, what you're paying for when you buy whitening options is for that percentage of bleach. And the higher the percentage, the quicker it's going to bleach, the longer it's going to last. So that's what it's doing. It's seeping into those little tubules just like the stain does. And the whitening products do the exact same thing, and they whiten the teeth. So some people, when they start to get sensitivity from whitening, the reason why is because you can over-whiten, you can whiten too much, you can leave it on for too long. And what happens is then that whitening product is getting all the way down into that like nerve, and that's what giving you that cold zing that bothers you. And so you just got to be careful. Whitening's not bad, but it is you can over-whiten and cause damage. So
what kinds of options would you recommend for people who want to whiten their teeth? Would you recommend like whitening strips? Would you recommend them coming to you guys or something with some other technique? What would people's best options be if they want that aesthetics like that?
So if you're looking at just over-the-counter whitening products, you know, of course, they have Crest strips and all the different sort of whitening strip products out there. And those are great. There's nothing wrong with them. They are getting more and more expensive. But I find the hard thing with the strips is it's hard to keep them on because your tongue messes with them and it bugs you and everything. But they do work, you know. It depends on how much stain you have, obviously. And then like what we offer here at our clinic, we have a whitening pen, which I really, really love. And I explain it to people, it's really just like painting your fingernails. You hold your lip up out of the way, you dry your front 6 to 8 teeth off, and you paint it on just like you're painting your fingernails. You leave it on for about 1 to 3 minutes. You lick it off, spit it into the sink, and repeat on the bottom. And I like that product because it's not very expensive. It's $25 for it, and that little pen can last you, depends on how much you're whitening, but 6 months easily. And you can't whiten over 14 days because we don't want people to have, you know, that sensitivity that we were discussing earlier. And I always tell people, start with a less expensive option and see if that works for you before you start investing into, like what I was going to talk about next, is whitening trays. That's something where we take impressions of your teeth, we make molds, which then we have trays that we make, and we give you little carpules of bleach that you dispense into each little tooth, and you wear it for an hour, 2 hours, whatever you want to wear it for. And that's going to be your most expensive bleaching because we're taking impressions, making trays, and then giving you these carpules of bleach. That will last you quite a while as well. All this stuff lasts longer, but, you know, when you're looking at bleaching trays, depending on the office you go to, I mean, you're looking up, you know, $300 to $600. compared to like 25. So, but you have to remember you're paying for that bleaching agent. And so the higher that percentage, you know, the quicker you're going to see your results, the longer they're going to last. But you're going to have more sensitivity with that higher percentage of that carbamide peroxide. So.
Okay. And while we're still talking about some of the visual things, what about stuff like veneers and false teeth? Can people go out and get those just for, oh, well, I don't like the way my teeth look and I want to get some kind of false teeth like veneers or something? Is that an option for people, or is that something that you would only recommend if they need it medically? How would that work out?
So, I mean, I guess it depends. I mean, there's two different answers to that question. Absolutely. So now if someone comes in and they're not happy with the, you know, color of their front six teeth, absolutely you can do veneers. And a veneer is where it's kind of like putting a fake fingernail on. You're putting a covering on the front side of that tooth. You're not drilling it down real deep. You're not making a buildup or anything like that. You're literally placing something on the front of a tooth that wraps around the edges of it. Now, veneers are very expensive, and the reason why is insurance does not cover any part of those because they're considered aesthetic. You know, they're not needed. It's not because you have decay that you're getting these. And so, yeah, you could come in. You know, there's people who have what's called fluorosis, where, you know, maybe when they were younger, they got exposed to too much fluoride in their water or whatever it was, and they have these discolored teeth. And no matter how much you whiten, it's never going to change it. And so they'll opt to have, you know, maybe like I said, the 4 to 6 front teeth completed with veneers, just for, you know, so they're the nice white, beautiful looking teeth. Now, you know, we here at our clinic, we actually don't offer whitening to people unless they are a patient of record. And the reason why is we don't, like you said, you don't want someone to come in who has a mouthful of decay and all these issues, and they're like, all I want to do is get my teeth white. Well, that's not healthy. It's not healthy for their mouth. It's not healthy for their oral system. So we don't want to encourage people to just get these aesthetic things done without, you know, getting the whole picture of their oral cavity.
So you kind of need to have that diagnostic just to know, like, okay, so you would be a good candidate for this, and then we can recommend for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, if that's what they're, you know, coming there for the clinic, to the clinic specifically for, absolutely. You know, we're gonna talk to them about all their options, but we're not going to talk to them just about that until we find out, you know, this is literally the only problem you have in your mouth. Absolutely. Let's do veneers. This sounds like a great option.
Okay. So I also do know quite a few people who have fake teeth. And so what would be what would you recommend for maintaining for people who have some of those fake teeth who might have gotten them done decades ago, and how would you recommend them to take care of it, maintain it? How do you discuss that with a new dentist? So what kind of process should you go through?
So when you say fake teeth, are we talking implants? Are we talking dentures?
So let's start with dentures.
Okay. So dentures, you should treat them just like they're your own teeth in your head. And you should, the big thing for people who are denture wearers is you need to take out your dentures at night. And the reason why is you need to let your tissue underneath of that breathe, especially on the upper teeth, because when you have a denture, it covers the whole roof of your mouth. It covers your whole palate. So what happens is if you're not removing those and letting the tissue breathe and brushing that area, you actually can get so many different oral conditions like stomatitis and oral candidiasis. And I mean, there's just so many things because that bacteria just harvests in that nice damp area that is not being flushed away by saliva or, you know, toothbrush abrasion or anything like that. So the big thing for people who wear dentures is you just need to make sure and take them out at night and soak them. And that's the other thing. Like I said, treat them like they're your own teeth. You brush them just like you'd brush your own teeth. You soak them in a nice, usually there's so many different layers, like Polident is the main one. It's just a little tablet you throw in a little jar with water, and you throw your dentures in there at night, and you pull them out, brush them in the morning, and put them in. So, and dentures will stain, too, just like your real teeth, especially if you're a smoker or something like that, a heavy coffee drinker. So over time, people sometimes get their dentures replaced just because they're staining up so much. So that's kind of how dentures are. I mean, they're pretty, as far as taking care of them, it's pretty self-explanatory there. Implants, though, implants are amazing. They are a game changer. I think they are becoming the new standard of dentistry versus doing like bridges or anything like that. Implants are just amazing because they last so much longer. And as long as the body accepts them and you don't have any issues with them, you know, some people even opt to, if a tooth needs a root canal, instead of getting the root canal and then the crown, they just are opting to have it pulled and having an implant placed because they don't want to go through the hassle of having a root canal and then this tooth failing, you know, 20 years down the road, where the implant, as long as it's taken well care of, it's not going to fail 20 years down the road. It's, you know, it's a screw that's placed into your jawbone. So with those ones, you treat it like it's your own tooth. Same thing. You're going to brush around it. The main thing a lot of hygienists will recommend is using something like a gum stimulator, which is just another type of oral hygiene brush, and they have you kind of go around the margins of it to keep it nice and clean, but you floss it and you brush it, and water pick is really good for implants. So,
So while we're talking about water picks and floss, how do water picks compare to something like floss or traditional toothpicks? Like when you eat corn or something and you have a bunch of stuff stuck in your teeth, does a water pick, does it function as a good enough substitute, or does it not fully replace flossing? How do those compare?
So it's hard as hygienists because, you know, for so long we're taught to tell people you need to floss, you need to floss, you need to floss. You need that mechanical stimulation to remove the plaque off of your teeth. And flossing is so important. I don't think people realize how important flossing is. It's just as important as brushing, but it's overlooked pretty much, you know, I would say like 60%, 70% of the time. You know, people be like, oh yeah, I brush, but I don't floss. So, water picks have come so far, and I used to not be a huge advocate of water picks until about 2 years ago. I had gone to two different dental conferences, and there was two different classes taught by different instructors, and they started talking about water picks. And they said that it is 99% effective in removing plaque and biofilm from the teeth. And it was 99.6% more effective than flossing, which I just couldn't believe. I couldn't wrap my head around that. But they weren't saying that flossing wasn't effective. It was just saying that it was that much more effective. So when you go and you compare two studies, water picks compared to flossing, the big thing is if you're doing it consistently for about 14 days, you're not going to see the difference between the two. If you're using the water pick every day or if you're using string floss, it's the same till you hit about 14 days. And then once you get past that 14 day where you're getting more into like the 20, 30 and beyond, the water pick does show that it reduces inflammation more than regular flossing. So, I love a water pick. I recommend them to quite a few of my patients. And the main reason why is most people, like we were talking about earlier, don't floss. They just don't. And they're like, I've never done it. I'm not going to do it. So it's like, well, let's find something that works for you then. And especially men, they have bigger hands. It's hard to get floss in their mouth, all this. I recommend a water pick. And let's be honest, it's like a glorified squirt gun. Everybody loves using it. You just stick it in between your teeth, you turn it on, and keep your mouth shut. If you open up your mouth, trust me, it's a mess. It ricochets off your teeth and your gums, and it'll ricochet off your mirror, and it's a whole thing. But anyway, they are very easy to use, and you just go along each tooth, and you pause in between your teeth and let it pulsate for about 3 seconds, and then you just keep going all the way around your mouth, and, you know, you spit the water out along the way, and it's very easy. And the nice thing about the water picks now, a lot of them are designed to be used in the shower. So they can get wet and you can get messy and it's not a huge deal. And men love them. Men use them so much more than I've ever seen them even think about flossing. So I love the water pick. I'm a huge advocate for it. And it shows to make a huge difference for people who have inflammation, you know, bridges, implants, just keeping them really clean. So
why should you be seeing a dentist every 6 months? Why not more or less frequently than the 6 month mark?
So the reason why we say 6 months is that bacteria that really starts to cause damage and issues that you guys can't reach as just, you know, with your daily brushing and flossing, it regenerates itself around 6 months. And that's why we say 6 months. Now, someone who has periodontal disease, the bacteria that they have is much different. It's more virulent, and it colonizes quicker. So we recommend every 3 months because we need to keep this bacteria level lower in this patient's mouth to maintain the bone structure that they have. So, you know, some people can go a year. Some people have really good hygiene habits where they are, you know, brushing twice a day, flossing once a day, or water picking, whatever that it is. And they do so well with it that they come in and sometimes you could be like, oh my gosh, didn't you just have your teeth cleaned 6 months ago? And maybe they hadn't been in 3 years, you know, that where they're just doing a really good job. And the main focus of going to see your dentist every 6 months is because, you know, with the diets that we have now, like we were talking about earlier, even healthy foods like fruits and stuff like that, they cause cavities. So what happens is you miss your dental appointment for 2 years. You come in, you might have six cavities, say, and you'd be like, I didn't even feel any of that, though. And it's like, well, it's in between your teeth. You know, they're really small, you know, but they're there. Well, if you would have went every 6 months, maybe we would have been like, hey, we're starting to see some really weak areas in between your teeth. Let's increase your fluoride amount. Let's talk about your diet. Let's talk about what are you doing at home that is causing you now to have more of these, we call them incipient areas. So we could have maybe prevented them from having six cavities by them just staying regular with us and us taking x-rays and reminding them, you know, don't forget to do this, or let's, you know, like I said, there's some people with really sensitive teeth. We recommend a different type of toothpaste. So there's just, it's all about prevention. Dental is huge in prevention. That is what we want to do, especially as hygienists. We want to prevent you from sitting in the dentist chair. We want you to have a healthy mouth, you know?
Awesome. That's all perfect. Thanks so much for letting me call you and being a guest on our show.
Yeah, and I was going to say one more thing that I find so important that I feel like a lot of people are becoming more aware of, but not yet, is periodontal disease. And the, do you know what periodontal disease is?
I do not.
Okay, so, you know, someone who comes in and say they're not a brusher or a flosser, or they're a young child, they'll have what's called like gingivitis. And that's just inflammation of the gums, which is completely reversible. You know, brushing, flossing, you know, using a mouth rinse, anything like that. In kids, it's very quick to reverse, especially healthy people, where it's like, okay, go home and floss for a week, and they almost could cure themselves of gingivitis. But over time, as we age, or if we're smoking, or if we have some other underlying issues, we can get what's called periodontal disease. And once you have that, you never get rid of it. You try to maintain what you have. And so what that is it's you're starting to lose the bone structure. So it includes your gums, but also like almost your jawbone, everything that holds your tooth in is your periodontal health. And that's what we're talking about. So this bacteria starts to attack the bone that holds your teeth in. And that's why people end up with dentures or false teeth, is because and most of the time, it doesn't necessarily have to mean, it can be from decay. But a lot of times when they're having, you know, whole mouth issues, it's periodontal disease. And the leading cause of periodontal disease is smoking or tobacco use. That's why we're always huge advocates of don't do it, because you're going to cause yourself to lose your teeth, you know. But anyways, where I'm going with this is that, you know, it's so easy for people to accept our gums as bleeding. And, you know, they'll come in, I know I don't floss, my gums bleed. And it's just kind of like a pass it off as it's not that big of a deal. But I tell people, well, if anywhere else on your body was bleeding, would you just be like, oh, well, it doesn't matter, and you would just continue to let it bleed? You know, I'm like, no, we don't do that. So why is it any different with our gums? It's so important. It's showing you, if your gums are bleeding, you have an active infection in your mouth. It's pretty gross if you actually start to think about everything that's going on in your mouth and all that bleeding that is occurring. But the main reason why I'm talking about it is not even that, but the medical field is starting to see things where periodontal disease is having a direct correlation with cardiovascular health, and people who it's related to people having strokes and adverse reactions when you're pregnant. And the biggest thing is that there is a bidirectional link between diabetes and periodontal disease, meaning if you have really bad periodontal disease, it can actually cause you to get diabetes or become diabetic. Or if you're diabetic, it can cause you to have periodontal disease. It's bidirectional, which is crazy to even think about. Like, I had my periodontal disease caused me to become a diabetic. It's scary. So I guess my big thing is I want people to be aware of is that your oral health is so important for your entire body. There's studies that show now that people, they'll do like an autopsy on a person who died of a heart attack, and they find the bacteria that causes periodontal disease in your mouth, they'll find it in your heart. It's crazy. So I love that more and more people are talking about this and realizing how important it is to go to dentist and have your teeth clean and just be aware, because it can affect your whole body and affect your life. So yeah, I'm going to end it with that.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thanks so much for being a guest. I really, really appreciate it. That's really good to know.
Yes, we always love seeing new faces and having new patients in the clinic. If anybody ever would like to come in and make an appointment, you could give the Dillingham Clinic a call at 842-2324 or the NACNAC Clinic at 907-246-6157. Thank you.